You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Oh wow, it's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT. Marcus, how's it going?
It's going well, and thank you, MOTAT.
And this first story is a bit of a heavy one, so...
Yeah, it is. So I saw this the other day, and excuse me, I thought it would be a good thing to talk about today. And this is about a study, it's a relatively new study, for 13 to 18-year-olds, and I think it's in New York and Pennsylvania in the United States. In this study, these kids have agreed to have software installed on their cell phones that tracks pretty much everything they do on their phones. It tracks their text messages, social media posts, even registers their voice in phone calls. It records selfies that they take, records the music they stream, basically everything they do on their phones. Yeah. And the thing that these people have in common is most of them have recently attempted suicide or are having suicidal thoughts. And they've all been diagnosed with a mental illness of one type or another, such as depression. And so this is a study. It's called the Mobile Assessment for the Prediction of Suicide. Acronym is MAPS. And it is... It's one of a few efforts that have recently been made to test whether mobile devices or information from mobile devices can answer or can determine whether or predict whether someone is at imminent risk of attempting suicide. And this is obviously extremely important. And the difficulty here is there are a lot of risk factors for suicide, but whether someone is at imminent risk of taking their own life is actually a really, really hard thing to predict. A large proportion of people in the population have one or more risk factors, but most people are not at imminent risk of actually harming themselves. So the idea is, can we use this information in that is collected from their activity online or on cell phones to actually figure out whether someone is going to harm themselves, need some help.
And so is this study, this is currently ongoing, or is it wrapping up?
This is currently ongoing. So, okay. I mean, I can't talk about whether it's been hugely successful or not. But it's really to try and address this increase in suicide rates that I think are definitely in the United States, and I think also in New Zealand as well. So I've got some statistics. For 10 to 24-year-olds, the rate climbed to just over 10 people per 100,000 in 2017, which is up more than 6 per 100,000 from a decade earlier. So that's more than a 50%. Right? In fact, that's more than doubled from a decade earlier. More than 6,700 young people took their lives in 2017, which is just blows my mind. So it's the second leading cause of death for teens and young adults after unintentional injuries. In 2017, a survey of 15,000 high school students by the CDC said 7.4% of those said they had attempted suicide in the past 12 months. 7.4% of 15,000 high school students. That's a lot.
So the people that are involved in this, they, like you said, they've they've consented. They want to be involved in this study, and that means some sort of software on their phone. If this was to prove successful, I suppose, is this something that governments could put? Would this be something that they take on board?
This is early days, and there are a lot of ethical issues to consider here. And by no means is this a problem that has been solved or. There's a lot of work to do to try and figure this out. Like I said, there's a lot of risk factors for suicide. You know, the strongest is have you tried to commit suicide before? Mental illness is obviously a risk factor. Chronic illness can be a risk factor. Even access to lethal means is a risk factor. And you know, if you think about people that you know, you may probably know people with mental illness, you probably know people with some chronic disease, you know, that, but they're not all at imminent risk. So there is, you can get all that information from health records, medical records, or a lot of that from medical records, but that captures a huge number of people. Very few of them are actually in imminent danger. So this idea of being at imminent risk is sort of an ephemeral risk. Very, very few previous studies have really been able to have led to predictions that are any better than just chance.
Mm. I wonder, I mean, obviously this is something, given there is this, I mean, it's horrible. It's a major issue in many societies, I think, at the moment, and has been for a long time. And it's, I guess the study is trying to provide something which is a monitoring, trying to monitor and trying to stop it from happening, right? Anticipate,
yeah,
and stop it.
Yeah.
How do we get sort of more work, I suppose, that goes into also dealing with the causes, in the sense that there is, if this is increasing, and this is, when people are facing this on a mass level, yeah. I just wonder, you know, what, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I guess, the prevention side of it.
Mm.
You know, can we identify at-risk kids in this case?
Mm.
But yeah, the other side of the coin is, what is it? Why are suicide rates increasing? You know, what is it in society that is causing this? And that's a whole different story, I guess.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me how they're actually trying to use this data. Or what exactly they're getting from people's cell phone use. I just want to talk about that for a second, because all those data sources, I guess, that they're collecting, you know, they can all be used, I guess, together to try and figure out if a person is at imminent risk. For example, in the 90s, psychologists proposed that a key factor uniting suicides is this thing called psychological pain, or sometimes called psych ache. And they're aiming to detect this sort of psychological pain by recording people's voices. So it can be, you can identify psychological pain in people's tone of voice, in the music they listen to, the language they use in text messages or in phone calls, and in the photos that they take, maybe selfies that they take. You know, they're trying to design and implement algorithms, machine learning algorithms, that put all those data sources together and try and flag if a person is at risk or not. Another important factor is sleep disturbances. If people aren't sleeping very well, they tend to be more at risk. Signs of faltering social relationships, you know, lots of breakups or friendships coming and going, could also sort of be put together in the mix and sort of try to identify people at risk. But there's a lot of ethical issues here, because we're monitoring people. I mean, the people in this study have agreed to do this, and they're being monitored. You know, their every sort of phone action is being monitored, and that's very, 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 you know, invasive to people's lives. And I'm guessing most people don't want that. Mm. You know, don't want that to happen. And they haven't, the people in this study, they haven't, none of the people in the study have tried to commit suicide yet. The researchers want to lead, sorry, they want to observe the lead up to a suicide attempt, but they don't want that, obviously,
So incredibly difficult in the ethics of that.
Right. So they can't sit back and allow them to harm themselves. So they have to be vigilant. So that they are really closely monitoring their activity, and if they do see any signs, they call parents, they call people that can help, and if the teen doesn't respond, then, you know, they get the authorities involved as quickly as possible. That hasn't happened yet, but they've got to be very, very careful about this. So even if they can design a sort of an algorithm that is powerful enough and predictive enough, it can't necessarily be deployed broadly. This is going to be focused on these adolescents, not necessarily for adult populations or different sections of society. you know, it's consent is really important. Yeah. Obviously, these kids have all consented to do this. And very few people realize that we're being monitored already. If you're active on Facebook, Facebook is applying an automated screening system to flag posts indicating suicide risk. And these are reviewed by a Facebook employee. So they're already doing this. We didn't sign consent for them to do this. So there is these sort of ethical issues. How much monitoring of our lives should we or could we allow to offset this horrible increasing risk of suicide?
And I mean, this is probably would this be the first of its kind type study?
I think it's one of a few of studies that are just emerging at
more
the moment.
Recently.
There's very, very... One, this is a nascent field.
Because, like you say, that risk is increasing or that those rates are increasing, but two, because the technology, I suppose, is available.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Marcus, for that.
I just want to say that if any of you out there are thinking of suicide or you need help, there is a number in New Zealand, 0508 828 865. If you have thoughts of suicide, that's available 24/7, and it's operated by trained counsellors. Talk to someone, call the Suicide Crisis Helpline. If you feel like you're in imminent danger, please call emergency services.
Thank you, Marcus. We do have a couple of other stories if you wanted to touch on those before we finish.
Sure. Just two small ones. The first one, I want to talk about Machu Picchu. You probably know that Machu Picchu is this incredible 15th century sort of citadel type place built by the Incans in Peru. But the question is, why did they build it there in sort of a pretty inaccessible place?
Mm.
And it turns out the answer could be... is that it's situated at the crossing of two fault zones. So tectonic plates come together,
yeah,
create faults.
Isn't that a dangerous place to build?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But when these faults sort of you know, moving and they're actually creating a lot of rubble, rock. And that rock and rubble made it easier for them to build in those locations,
right,
because there were lots of smaller pieces of rubble. Also, the shifting ground led to channels for meltwater and things like that. So there was less risk of flooding and other sort of... It helped drain away water during thunderstorms and things like that and preserved the site for a long, long time.
Wow.
Apparently.
Okay. And the last one?
The last one. the last one is a thing about...
Lots of people go and climb Machu Picchu. So is it that? Are you saying that's like quite a dangerous? I mean,
It's inaccessible. I think.
Right.
Well, it's less. I mean, it's a difficult walk and climb. I think. I've never been.
All right. Helium.
If you'd like to fund research, I'd happily go.
Okay.
An expedition?
Yeah. No. I don't
yeah,
need money.
So the last one, helium. So helium is the second most abundant element in the universe. There is a ton of it, except here, there's a shortage. On Earth, yeah, not here in Auckland, but just here on this planet, there is a shortage because, and so as a result, prices for helium are going up and up. And the question is, why do you care? Well, it's going to make your helium balloons a bit more expensive. But it's also affecting much more than that. So it's used in MRIs to keep the magnets cool in the MRIs. It's used in the space industry. It's used in it's used to fill party balloons. It's used to for providing lift in dirigibles, whatever you call them.
Mm.
The reason it's very rare is because it is so light, it is inert. It's trapped in rocks in the ground, and as soon as you provide a route for it to escape, it just goes out of the atmosphere, goes into space. It's produced by radioactive decay in the rocks. So it's sort of constantly being produced, but getting at it is really expensive and time consuming. And the market isn't really big enough to. It's petrochemical companies that tend to be doing this, and the market really isn't big enough so that they don't bother.
So if we run out of it completely, is that a?
Well, that's a problem because it's really a sort of essential part of a lot of medical treatments, and certainly science is it's very important. And also, who could do without helium party balloons?
Well, this is what I'm saying though. Should we stop buying helium party balloons?
There is an argument for that, but I think it's a proportion of the total helium used. It's probably a small proportion.
But it is a proportion.
And for example, the cost of helium has gone up by about an order of magnitude in the last 10 years or so, which is a significant amount.
Mm. All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Marcus.
You're very welcome.
See you in a couple of weeks.
You will.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
This week.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.